We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Sandy Horroven, who is the Green Party's candidate for next year's Bristol mayoral election. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So the first question that I like to ask you, Sandy, is what made you decide to stand as the Green Party's candidate for Bristol, the mayoralty of Bristol?
So I'm passionate about two things. One is the environment, but also second is social justice. And for me, the Green Party brings those two things together in a way that makes sense and doesn't play one off against the other. So I think also being a mayor is a very practical post. It's unlike an MP where you're debating big ideas, and unless you're in government, you don't have a huge amount of power. It's really important that actually we start to build the new world that we want to live in our city. So by combining social justice and environmental justice, we can make our cities more livable places for people and better for the environment. And there are all sorts of examples, like building more local and renewable energy. Not only does it reduce our carbon emissions, but it is good for local jobs and creates cheaper electricity for local people too. So that's a really good example of how it meets social, economic and environmental targets. And really, as mayor, I'd like to be able to put those things into practice.
Mm. Now, of course, your manifesto hasn't come out yet. It'll obviously come out sooner to the election. But just briefly, what are your main priorities going out into the campaign? What do you want your campaign to be about?
So I can tell you that there are three things. The first is transport and sorting out our traffic problems and cleaning up our air. The second has to be housing. And the third is going to be around the economy and jobs. Now, obviously, coronavirus throws all of these things up in the air. So as we get closer to the election, we're going to have to see what the situation is. But, you know, Bristol suffers from some of the worst congestion, some of the dirtiest air, and the amount of traffic that we have in the city means that actually business doesn't do as well as it could because people are stuck in traffic all the time. So investing in more bus lanes in the long term, I appreciate now public transport isn't a priority because of COVID, but in the long term it will be. Investing in really good walking and cycling routes and pedestrianisation is going to be key as well. And that way we know that business flourishes, we know that it creates jobs, cleans up our air, and makes our city a more livable place. So that's transport. The second thing is housing. We have an overheated housing market. Even in this in the pandemic, there's not enough houses and we need to build more. And my priority is not only to support the private sector to build housing, but actually to build more council housing. Mm. We committed to building 2,000 new council homes just before the election was cancelled, and that's something that I will stick by. And then, of course, as COVID bites and you know, there is a real threat that many, many people will lose their jobs, we need to be investing in the economy and building and supporting business to create new jobs, and particularly green jobs. So that's things like insulating our home, putting in more renewable energy systems in our city too. So the idea is we can have green jobs and build back better.
Now, you mentioned housing there and working with the private sector to ensure that there are more houses in Bristol. In that regard, would you want to make sure that the people that you're working for understood that the houses had to be as you know, climate friendly and as ecologically friendly as possible? And how would you make sure that they were, you know, aware of that and understood that in terms of planning where to build the houses and what sort of materials they would use?
Yeah, so absolutely, of course. And we know that, modern housing design, modern materials can be far more environmentally friendly than in the past. And I think a lot of developers are starting to realise that. But in Bristol, there is a sort of partly owned council company that is that we would start to use. It's called Gorham Homes. It uses council land to build private sector partnerships with housing builders. And when you're in partnership, you can insist on enough social housing and affordable housing, but also you can insist on environmental standards too. Alongside that, we can add in new planning guidance as well. But, you know, to a point, living in this sort of market system that we live in, we have to understand that house builders want to make a profit too. Currently, I think many of them make a little bit too much, and we ought to use some of that to make our buildings both more affordable and more environmentally friendly. And that's what we would look to work with private developers in order to achieve that.
You also mentioned jobs there as one of your priorities. What kind of more green jobs and green sector jobs would you be looking at that you would try to encourage? Do you have any particular industries in mind that you'd like to promote? Mm.
So I'm there's nothing specific, I suppose. Well, okay. So one of the key things that we would want to do is to start to insulate all of the council homes. It's the best way to save money for those who are poorest on the electricity bills and reduce carbon. And we reckon in order to insulate all of the council homes, we're creating up to 10,000 new jobs in the city over the next 10 years. So that's clearly one thing that we can do. Bristol is also a hub of green tech. So we have three universities here, a number of big renewable energy companies. And our job would be to support those startup companies. There are spaces in the city where we can support newly formed companies to scale up and give them advice. You know, many of the small and medium-sized enterprises in the city that I speak to often say they want to go green, but, you know, it takes a lot of work to look at your supply chain, to look at your the materials or the ingredients you're using or whatever. But actually many of them can learn very quickly from each other. And I've been part of a number of meetings to bring small and medium-sized businesses together so they can learn from each other. And, a very good example just down the road for me is an independent bakery. They've done a whole load of research on how they can get everything from their milk to their dough to even their electricity from an environmentally friendly source, and they're really willing to share that with other companies too, which means that you can spread out that knowledge and that understanding throughout business in the city. And that's something that I think the council should be doing more of, because actually a lot of businesses in the city want to be green. But often it's just having the time and the expertise to do that. And I think that's the role that the council can play in supporting green tech, insulation and small enterprises to go green.
Mm. Now, of course, Bristol this year very recently hit the headlines when the statue of Edward Colston was pulled down during Black Lives Matter protests. If you're elected mayor, how would you engage with people in Bristol who want to see more done to deal with Bristol's past associations with slavery and to move forward from that in a progressive and a cooperative way?
Yeah. So I'm absolutely, something is in my working life, in my day job, I run a large youth charity that works with 10,000 young people each year. We've got 150 staff. And, you know, one of the key things that we do is to work alongside the Black community to make sure Black young people have the best start in life. And at the same time, I'm very privileged to work with one of my fellow Green councillors, Cleo Lake, who has been campaigning. She was Lord Mayor of Bristol a couple of years ago, and she has been campaigning for her whole life to both legally take down the Colston statue and to put in place a proper museum of the enslaved African people to raise awareness of the issue. And so it's something that Greens have been working on for a long, long time in this city. And the tearing down of the Colston statue, whilst I don't agree with the way it's done, has really started the debate. But, you know, where we are now, we're 6 months on from that. The plinth is still empty. Many of the Black community are feeling frustrated that that the plinth is still empty and very little is actually being done. So on the plinth itself, I've proposed right from the start that it should be almost like the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square, where we can have Bristol artists, and starting with Black Bristol artists, putting their pieces up to tell the story of the whole city, not just the Black community, but the whole city. You know, maybe a new piece of art every 3 months or so, but very much starting with Black artists. But more importantly than that, what we need to do is really to invest in the Black communities themselves. So supporting the community centres there. And, you know, one of the key things is housing. You know, many of the Black community, particularly the Somali community, are living in large families in small houses with not enough bedrooms for every child to have their bedroom, their own bedroom and their own peace and quiet. And it's that's why housing is one of our key issues, because we know it will benefit the city as a whole, but it will also particularly benefit the Black community in Bristol. And it's something that we really need to focus on. The third thing I would say as well is around education. You know, we know that education is the best out of poverty. It's the best way to help everybody, and particularly young people, reach their potential. But again, in the inner city areas of the city, which is where predominantly where the Black community live, there are not enough spaces in schools. And there's, again, just across from where I live, I'm looking out of my window now, there's an industrial estate which has been earmarked for the last 4 years to have a new secondary school built on it. It was due to open this year, but there's no sign of even a bulldozer, let alone planning permission. And so pupils from the inner city are being crammed into existing schools, which means it will put down the quality of our education. So again, the Black community and all of the more disadvantaged communities need investment, and that's something that we would look to do if I became mayor.
Now, of course, we've mentioned coronavirus throughout our discussion. If you're elected, how do you think coronavirus may hinder you implementing your manifesto and the things you want to do in Bristol?
So I think, of course, it is hindering some things. The creation of jobs can't happen when people are on furlough or in lockdown, or business can't thrive. You know, house building and development has slowed down. More people are getting into their cars in order to avoid public transport. So there are some serious barriers there, and we do need to get over this initial issue. But I was pleased today to see that a vaccine seems to be a step closer, with one of the big companies applying for further trials. So that's a good thing. But, you know, in some ways, we just have to deal with those things. They're an immediate crisis and we must get over them. But lockdown and coronavirus, despite being a terrible thing, and particularly those who are suffering physically or who've lost loved ones, to which my heart goes out. But there are some opportunities that come from it. People are realising what's important, that families and friends and neighbourhoods and communities and open space and clean air are the really important things in life. And therefore, I think that gives us an opportunity to say, well, maybe we can focus on these things. We can rebuild our local communities, our local shops and local businesses, and that there'll be more support for that. I think people are more willing to look at different ways of getting around the city. So investing in cycle lanes and more bus lanes and better pedestrian access. So I think there are some things that come out of it. And, you know, the one thing I do think, and I talk to a lot of the young people that we work with on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, they're sort of chomping at the bit. I think there's going to be, when this is over, and it may be some time before it's over, but after it's over, I think there's going to be an explosion of energy and creativity and new business ideas and new ways of doing things, which we need to harness, and we need to be ready to harness that. And Bristol is well placed. It's a thriving, vibrant, creative city, and with good leadership, it can take advantage of the potential growth spurt that will happen after this really difficult period.
Do you think that coronavirus has changed people's attitudes towards climate change? Do you think it's given them the opportunity to look at it again and perhaps be either more committed or perhaps be convinced for the first time about its impact?
I think it's a good question. I think most people believe that climate change is an issue, but have sort of seen it as something a bit distant, and, you know, they might do a bit of extra recycling or get on their bikes at weekend, but it hasn't yet fundamentally changed the way we work and the way we do business. I think lockdown, particularly the first lockdown, did show us a slightly different way, and I think people appreciated that actually some of the changes we need to make for climate change might actually be just generally beneficial for our city and for our country as a whole. I think on the flip side, understanding how difficult it's been to get through coronavirus also means shows how difficult it's going to be to really take on a much bigger issue like climate change. But I come back to my previous answer, which is I think people have, a crisis like this makes us look at ourselves and think about really what is important. And therefore, I do think people's views and approach to climate change is shifting, because I think we're realising what is important, and the sort of frivolous consumer things that we might have enjoyed don't bring us the joy and happiness that we thought they did. And actually in hard times and when we're faced with a challenge, actually we need to look at the things that really matter. So our community and our clean air and our parks and our neighbourhoods and communities.
Now, of course, recently we've seen the declaration of the winner of the recent US presidential election. Joe Biden is now president-elect of the United States. And he has said quite publicly and unequivocally that once he becomes president, he will reverse President Trump's decision to leave the Paris Climate Accord. Do you think that it's important that the United States is part of the Paris Climate Accord and is at the table promoting science on climate change?
Gosh, of course, it's absolutely vital that America, as the biggest economy, takes climate change seriously. You know, when Donald Trump left, announced that he was going to leave the climate accord, it effectively allows everybody else in the world to throw up their hands and go, well, if America's not going to do anything about it, the world's going to get warmer anyway, so we might as well carry on ourselves. You know, this is what leadership is about. Tackling climate change is hard, and I think I sometimes say that the Green Party makes it sound a bit easy. It isn't going to be easy. It's going to be really hard, but that's the difference between leadership and just doing what Trump has done on all sorts of issues over the last 4 years, where he's just thrown aside the difficult challenges that we face. So having America back in the Paris Climate Accord is absolutely essential, and I think shines a light again for the rest of the world to follow. It forces other big polluters like China and other Western countries to follow suit. And it also just makes us all feel like we're in it together. Mm. And this is something that we do have to tackle together, and it's worth tackling together. And for that, I will be eternally grateful to Joe Biden. Of course, the key is, and this is the issue that we see across the world, is lots of politicians talk about it, including our own mayor in Bristol, talk a lot about tackling climate change. But the reality is very, very different to the rhetoric. And therefore, it's really important that politicians are willing to follow through. And I'm afraid in Bristol, we haven't seen that. And that's my promise, is to actually take action rather than just talking about it and creating strategies and plans. And I hope that Joe Biden does the same when he becomes president next year.
Now, of course, next year we will see not just the mayoral elections, but council elections and parliamentary elections in Scotland and Wales. How prepared do you think the Green Party are for these elections, and how optimistic are you at the Green Party potentially making gains and winning council seats and such?
So we're feeling optimistic, you know, people are talking about climate change more. People are understanding that some of the things we need to do to tackle our environmental issues are good for our cities and towns. So we're hopeful to make some significant gains. And in very green places like Bristol, we think we've got a real chance of winning control of the council.
What do you think are the Green Party's prospects for the next general election? I know it's quite a while off, but do you think that more people will be inclined to vote for the Green Party at the next general election? Do you think that the support and momentum is growing?
Yes, I do think that the support and momentum is growing. I think we're still in a period, and the Biden election, I hope, it signals the beginning of the end of a period of real divisiveness and partisanship and polarised politics. And I think people are looking for a different way. And the old right-left paradigm, if that's what you want to call it, is starting to wear pretty thin, especially as you sort of have Corbyn on one side and Boris on the other. So I think people are looking for a new way. I think the biggest challenge that actually we face as the Green Party is the voting system that we have. The first past the post system means that almost everybody makes a decision to keep the other guys out. So they vote either for Conservative or the Labour Party, which squeezes out smaller parties like the Green Party. And, you know, fundamentally, I think I would have to check the statistics exactly, but I think for a Conservative Party to get an MP takes about sort of 40,000, 50,000 votes. But for the Green Party to get our one MP, it takes 1 million votes across the country. So at the moment, the system isn't fair. The system doesn't represent the voting patterns of the people of the country. And I think if we change the system, then that's when we would see smaller parties like the Green Party doing much better, because I think people want to vote with their heart. They want to vote green. This is what we hear on the doorstep. But when it comes to a general election, they fear the other party, so vote either Conservative or Labour. I think that will be different in local elections, because I think people are seeing Green Party councillors working hard in their communities already, and I think I think the Green Party is set to do well again, like we did last time.
Now, you mentioned partisanship there and perhaps a move away from it. And of course, this has been mentioned for many years. But do you think that the prospect of a pact or some sort of arrangement between the Green Party and the Liberal Democrats and the Labour Party could be something potentially beneficial for the future, whether on a local or a national scale? Or do you think it would be better for the Green Party to stay on its own as such?
Well, look, I'll give Bristol as an example. We work with other parties all the time. And in Bristol, I've promised to have a a rainbow cabinet. So if I win as mayor, I would have a cabinet of councillors that would represent all of the parties that were voted for in the local election. So it is already happening locally, but I think until the Labour Party is the dominant party on the left wing of politics, until they are willing and until they understand that they're not going to get significant parliamentary majorities without working with others, I think we're a little bit stuck. The Green Party and the Lib Dems have offered for a long time to work alongside the Labour Party, but the Labour Party has believed that it can do it on its own. But, you know, we've had 10 years now of a Conservative government. They've got the biggest majority they've had in a long, long time. And currently there's no sign of them losing power. So I think it's incumbent on the Labour Party now to start looking at itself and how it works with others. Because frankly, at the moment, the Green Party doesn't have the power to do that, but we're very willing to work with them if they were willing to offer.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great to speak to you, Sandy. And I've got one final question. As we've obviously been discussing, coronavirus has affected our lives completely. And currently in England, we're in a lockdown. When that lockdown lifts, or when coronavirus is in some way resolved, what one thing that you haven't been able to do because of this situation are you most looking forward to being able to do again?
Me personally? Go out, see friends and have a good dance. I love dancing. But, you know, we can't see people from other households. And even when lockdowns eased, you could see one or two people. But, you know, we're social creatures. We like meeting others. That's how we gain energy and come up with new ideas and have fun and build community. That's how I do it. And I'm missing being with people, despite the wonders of technology and the fact that it means that we can reduce our car use and all that sort of thing. I think I just miss people, and I like being with people, and I'm looking forward to being with more people when lockdown ends.
Well, hopefully it won't be that long till you're back out there dancing again. For anybody who is interested in following your campaign or supporting you, where should they go to find out more information about you and your campaign?
So you can look on my website, Sandy, and then the number 4mayor.co.uk, or just search Sandy and Bristol Green Party, and you should find everything you need. And please do sign up if you're interested in being a volunteer and getting involved, or drop me a line and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.